coming up.
I think the plan with that was to actually get them to go out into the peripheries because their primary health care is so good in Cuba, is to essentially train them in an environment where they've got excellent primary health care and then put those doctors where they need to be. So taking doctors from Limpopo, so on a sort of a bursary scholarship type program, where they would take doctors from Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, and other rural areas, and then taking those doctors and putting them back into their local environments to improve the primary health care in those areas.
Yeah,
I think that essentially was the idea to begin with, but now we've overproduced. Hello and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. My name is Dr. Suhail Essa, and joined with me in the studio is a man that you've seen on your screens, yes, on all of your tiny little screens every single day, I'm sure, for the last couple of months. Why? Because he's got no job. And he's yet to tell us why. I'm here with Solidus. Is that how you...
Yeah, it's good enough. Most people just mess it up and say soldier or just soldier. Give up halfway. Most
people just... Yeah. Solidus, huh?
Yeah. Otherwise, solid works as well.
Okay, solid. Solidus. Yeah. Now, I have to know how a black man got that name. Do you have a Greek grandfather or...
No. Especially the thing I've come to Greek is salad. But now, I think, you know, sometimes you have those parents that read a lot. So my dad's one of those people, you know.
Okay.
Very cultured man. So that's how he got it.
Where does Solidus come from? Like, what's the...
It's, so like in ancient Rome, they used to have this golden coin, right? Which was like a kind of like a currency for the greats. And I think for him, it was always a translation of treasure in a way.
I know your dad.
Yo, that's a powerful thinker. That's powerful.
He didn't even like steal someone's name from the books.
Yeah.
He actually like got meaning in a coin.
Oh, Solidus. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the full name?
The full name?
Yeah.
So Solidus is short for Solidus.
Yeah, and then what's the rest of it?
Like it's Solidus.
The surname,
Oh, short, yeah. Second
oh,
name.
You thought I just had it up? Okay, yeah.
You know, like,
you thought that was... I thought that Solidus was short for something.
Solidus, Tbilisi, Nxumalo.
Ah, okay. All right, cool. So Solidus, where do you hail from?
So I'm from a very small village called Emanfeni, which is a Mhlabelingane. Jozini is probably the closest thing.
Oh, I've been to Jozini. Nice.
Yeah, it's a nice place.
Yeah. Okay, nice.
A village boy, but you know, trying to make it in the city like empty. So we'll see, yeah.
Yeah. Nice stuff, man.
Yeah.
And I mean, a boy from the rurals like that, how do you get into medicine?
It was a weird one. I think...
Also, you came from a village and your name was Solidus. Surely the guys in the village is like, Solito!
I'm sorry.
The crazy thing is, for the longest time, I actually always had to fight people to tell them how to say my name. Like, the kids, I did tell them, no, my name is Solidus. And like, when we are Zenza. Like, literally, for the longest time, people would call me Soli or Solidus or whatever.
Solidus.
People were confused. Like, people were convinced that's it. So, you know, for a while, eventually I studied, I finished my trick, I earned the right to have my own name pronounced correctly. So, yeah, here we are today.
Nice.
Now it's Dr. Nxumalo, right?
Yeah, Dr. Nxumalo. Yeah. It's just exactly good.
Even though we know you as Dr. Solidus.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's right. Cool. A lot of people love, especially doctors, you know, losing your last name.
I figured, like, initially I hated the name, you know, because people were teasing me and everything. But I think after a while I got really grateful that I have something that I don't share with anyone else.
Yeah.
So yeah, going to love it.
So look, I mean, people are probably wondering at this stage if they've never seen you on TikTok or in social media, who's this guy and why is he here on our podcast? Basically, this episode we'll be talking about the unemployment crisis amongst young doctors in South Africa. I believe there's about 1,800, if I'm not mistaken, new doctors post community service, and there are only 800 posts that opened this year.
In addition to the previous year as well.
So. In addition to the previous year. So that's a deficit of about 1,000 posts that we need to fill. Currently there's, I mean, on average, I suppose, there's 1,000 new doctors that are unemployed that either have to think about working in private in the private sector or go overseas. So Solidus here is one of many, many young doctors that has also suffered at the hands of our crumbling healthcare system that isn't currently serving our young doctors, nor our patient population. I think it's on average, I'm trying to recall the number of doctor per patient.
Well, it's very bad. I think it's
Like 8 to 1 or 10 to 1 or something.
No. It's in the thousands. It's definitely not 8 to 1. Oh, it's in the thousands.
Oh.
I remember it was like something like 0.1 for 1,000, like a silly value like that. But I don't know why anyone's saying that.
Mm.
But I mean, we all know. We all work in public institutions.
Yeah.
And you can see there's, I mean, we're you can easily see 50 people. There's one person, you know, one doctor. So there's a huge crisis.
Mm.
But my question for you is, tell us more. How are you dealing with you know, unemployment? Where did it start? So where are you in your journey of being a doctor?
I'd probably say I've had to take a bit of a forced break, you know. But obviously I finished internship, I finished ComServe. Right now I'm 3 months post ComServe, currently obviously still not working. So it's been a very tricky one. You know, it kind of feels like, you know, if you every day you're waking up and you had a sense of purpose, you know. And now all of a sudden, this one thing that you're really devoted to, that you absolutely love doing, and then one morning you wake up and someone tells you that you can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And the only way to do it is to do it for free, mm-hmm. you know. So it's been a lot. It's been tough. I think even mentally I've just honestly just taken a toll. But now and then I go and I volunteer in hospitals just to kind of feel alive again, because I think that for me, medicine and surgery became what life actually is. So it feels like oxygen, I guess.
Mm. And like some people usually say, like, okay, so you know what? You guys doctors are unemployed. Like, why? What makes you special? So the country, everybody's unemployed in the country. We have a high unemployment rate. So, like, why do you think there's such a high unemployment rate? And why do you, like, what is the main driving behind, the main source behind all these problems?
I think obviously, look, I'm one who doesn't like diving into matters of corporate governance. You know, I feel like I it's difficult. I wouldn't be able to really tell exactly what the issue becomes. You know, I've got, it's kind of like, I don't know, like if an Arsenal fan was telling a Manchester City fan how to win the league. You know, you have an idea of how it's supposed to go, but you have no idea how to actually really do it. You know, but I think one can come to the conclusion that it's been a matter of poor planning at its most simple base, being the production of doctors and the creation of jobs. So I would honestly just say in the simplest manner, it's been a thing of like producing without actually also producing those opportunities for employment. Yeah. And that's exactly what we're facing. And I think the hardest thing about even just being a medical doctor is the fact that, and I agree, the government doesn't necessarily always post or always jobs, but I do think the government owes people good healthcare that's at a certain level that's substantial, you know. And I think working in these hospitals, sometimes we did calls where as a community service doctor, you're doing an ML call because it's understaffed. So for a lot of us, I think even in my view, it isn't a thing of feeling entitled to a post, but it's rather knowing that you're needed, knowing that the communities around us are actually suffering and there's definitely a necessity for you to be hired, but then still that need, their need isn't being met. So much I would say, it's not so much my constant need of fulfillment in terms of getting a job and getting money, but I think feeling like that gap needs to be breached, and it isn't right that the gap exists in the first place. So you know they definitely need you, you know? Mm. Yeah, so I think that's why it hits so much, because the patients, I guess, that you care about are the ones that are suffering.
I mean, like, everybody knows government. Like, there's a lot of people complaining. I think, what's the guy who complained recently about, like, Helen Joseph?
Tom London.
Tom London. So there's a poor state in public healthcare.
Yes.
And we know that, like, it's almost like 80-something percent, 85% of the general population are using government healthcare. They don't have medical aid.
Mm.
A very small percent of people are using medical aid. So a lot of us are using the government healthcare system, and there's a big need for that to be improved.
Mm.
So we need a lot of doctors to be employed in that system.
Yes.
Also, a lot of people don't understand that like we think people think that, oh, why do you want the government to employ you? Why can't you do something else, right? And the main way of training in the country is through the government sector. Right? You need to actually go and, like, medical students start the government sector in the public hospitals, right? All training happens in the government hospitals. So it's a necessary step that we have to go through in the government system. Mm. People will be like, oh, go and do something else.
Yeah, it's not that simple, yeah.
And another one, I think, you know, we also forget, especially in our country, like Nassim just pointed out, where you find 15%, actually it's probably even less than that, like the number of people that use medical aid. It's a very small number that are serviced by a lot of hospitals and a lot of specialist doctors.
Sure.
So if you have to move into a field like that, you basically have no place. Those people have probably a 1:1 if you were to really look into it. So you're not really needed there. And there's no training for you there.
True.
Yeah, but just going back to government, I think you touched on something very important. The fact that, you know, the biggest problem that as a country we've had is that the Minister of Health or the health department hasn't been looking into improving infrastructure, increasing the number of posts as they've been focusing on getting sort of, you know, a lot of African or black doctors trained. Mm. For example, look at the Nelson Mandela, Fidel Castro, that foundation or the you know that thing where they were sending people to Cuba. To get trained. I mean, that program I think in a year produces something like 300 to 500, if I'm not mistaken. You know, but it's a large number of students that come from.
I think
abroad.
The plan with that was to actually get them to go out into the peripheries because their primary health care is so good in Cuba, is to essentially train them in an environment where they've got excellent primary health care and then put those doctors where they need to be. So taking doctors from Limpopo. Mm. So on a sort of a bursary scholarship type program where they would take doctors from Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, and other rural areas, and then taking those doctors and putting them back into their local environments to improve the primary health care in those areas.
Yeah.
Mm. I think that essentially was the idea to begin with. But now we've overproduced. We flooded the market, pretty much.
Yeah,
there's oversupply and there is a demand, but we're just not meeting the demand because it's definitely a demand. We see a huge exodus now of doctors moving. The most popular place is Ireland because you don't need to write any conversion exams. So I know a lot of colleagues of mine that have gone that route, packed up and just went there. But then the problem is you go to like foreign countries and you're treated as an outsider there and they don't want you to specialize there. Mm. They want you to just be part of the workforce. Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of the doctors that end up going to Ireland either stuck in a post or they're happy as a general practitioner, which is fine, or end up coming back. I know a few that have gone, worked in some of the bigger cities in Ireland. And literally, they made them sit in the emergency department, would not allow them, no matter what they tried, no matter what exams they did, no matter what experience they got, nothing. Yeah. They just couldn't progress.
Mm. And it's also like, they're also trying to limit the amount of international medical graduates going into other countries. Like UK, they're now prioritizing people who qualified in that country instead of other countries, right? Even the same thing's happening in America. And so, Doc, have you thought about leaving and going somewhere else?
Sure. I think, look, obviously that's a conversation a lot of people always have, you know. I will say, I don't, like, not to really get racial, but I don't think as an African man it's easy to blend in everywhere, you know. It's for the same reason why we'll probably never have a black James Bond. You know, if something happened, you'd intentionally know that that's probably Bond. You can't hide behind unless he wears one of those things, you know. And I think that's just the thing for me. The thought of just going into like this new space, and it's new things, man. Like you don't know the people, you don't know people's prejudices, you know. And I always say, I love South Africa, in that racism never catches me, you know, without me actually expecting it. You know, I'm always just prepared. I'm always on my toes. You know, you're in another country, you don't know what history and prejudices people actually have. And I think one of the biggest problems I have is I believe in that African saying that it takes a village to raise a child, right? Mm. So for that reason, obviously the village starts to represent community. So for that reason, even when I think about it, like the thought of being raised by this community, this community here are helping me grow, become a doctor. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, when I'm qualified, you're telling me to pack my bags and you're stealing that opportunity from me to give back to the community that raised me. And you're saying I need to go give to a community that doesn't even know me, that doesn't welcome me, that doesn't appreciate me. I honestly feel like it would be an injustice. For that reason, leaving and going to another country for me is not something I'm open to.
Mm. And tell me, like, in terms of your background, in your family or in the community that you come from, do you come from you know, a line of doctors, or what kind of was the driving force?
No. So from my family, I was probably the very first person to even like go to university.
Oh, really? Know? Okay.
Yeah. Funny enough, I grew up in a very, very rural space. To paint a picture to you how rural it was. When I was 8, I never had any friends, right? And then when I turned 9, we got a tap at home, right? The moment I got a tap at home, I was the most popular person in the world. Like, everybody wanted to be friends with me. Yo. You know, because that's how rural the space is. So much that when I grew up, there was only one GP, right? And the area where I lived, only 3 people had cars, right? And one of the people who had a car was essentially like one of the GPs, the only GP in the area. Oh. So I think from that point in time, you know, given it was a very immature view, I thought to myself, definitely, like, I also want a car, you know? So definitely medicine is the thing that I want to do. But besides that, there were also things that happened in my life. Losing my sister while I was quite young. Mm. And I think as a child, I thought a doctor could save everyone, you know?
Mm.
And at that point, when my sister passed, all I had left was my mom and dad. So then I thought at that age that, okay, shot, you know, look, if I become a doctor, I can make sure that I can keep my family together and that these 2 people who are so important to me actually never die. And sure. I grew up. Eventually, I realized that it was a naive view, but I think the motivation just became, if I can keep other people's families together as well and make sure people aren't losing family members, then I would feel like that's a good purpose in life. And that's why I like surgery so much. Someone shows up, they're shot or they're stabbed in the heart. You know, something in a movie, you'd probably think they're going to die. Fast forward, operation, damage, resus, everything, and the patient's back home as if like it never happened and they don't remember it. And I think that's what's always motivated me, keeping families together.
Amazing stuff. Yeah. While we're on that topic, we have a video to play that they've been signaling me away. So let's see the video quickly.
I used to be poor. I had nothing. I used to sleep in my car. And it was an A class, not even a C. But I really won't lie. This is probably the toughest time in my life, man. Yo, mentally. And I've seen every rich person talk about when they used to struggle and how it made them stronger, you know? I just feel more hungry. At the same time, I'm motivated to write a book. You know, like, what would I call it? Like, the 5 Cent Club? Or Poor Dad, Poorer Dad? A True Rags-to-Rag Story? You know, because I sold all the other rags. I can really see the headlines. The New York Times called it a shame. But honestly, I'm not going to lie. This has kind of changed my perspective on life. You know, I used to walk around and look at homeless people and I'm like, you're so lazy. That could never be me. Now I walk around and think to myself, damn, all the good spots are taken. I'm sure people were even shocked seeing Dr. Strike. We were there with our signs and everyone was confused. After 30 minutes, like, what are they striking for? Luckily, the pharmacists were there to translate. But I'm not even upset at the government. I'm more upset at my biology teacher. She used to say, Given, if you keep on talking in the back, you'll never get a job. Study like Solomon and you'll be employed. Last week, Given got a tender for $2 million.
Sometimes.
Tough times never last.
Crazy, well, it's good that you managed to find humor
in all of this. Yeah,
in all of this, man. And the thing is, it's like it's really demoralizing. For us, I'm the only one here that actually has suffered that employment post Comsurf.
Yeah.
You guys were fine.
I think we're probably one of the last groups.
Post internship.
Yeah. You were also unemployed.
I was also.
Yeah.
Post internship.
So, I think one thing I noticed, even though, I mean, I didn't go through any of that stuff, is that, once you've transitioned from obviously medical student into sort of internship, just that seeing how things usually transition, you know, there's an online system where you apply and things just they seem to happen. You know, there's always, and you can see there's a demand for you. I think we tend to be caught up in all of that, and a lot of people realize when it's very late that you can actually apply for an MO post or medical officer post and not get one. Or there actually aren't a lot of medical officers. Like, and the reason why I say that is because you actually, most of these medical officer posts, they won't give anyone who doesn't show any interest, because of the demand, obviously. But they don't give people who don't show any particular interest in growing in whatever field or whatever discipline or department. And even if it's simple stuff, or not simple stuff, but like primary healthcare, even in primary healthcare, if you go for that interview and they ask you, do you want to be a family physician? And you say, no, I'm just passing time here so that I can get my pediatrics post one day. They won't give you that post. So just even those kind of things, people tend to realize that a bit late. And and yeah, I mean, it's led to a lot of people's downfall, I think.
Definitely.
But I mean, we do still have a shortage.
Like, you're saying like it could be that someone is not motivated to progress in that field. But a lot of the people who are applying for these MO posts are highly qualified. They've written all the exams. They've done all the courses. It's not an issue of qualification, you know.
Or motivation.
Or motivation. It's usually an issue of just there's no posts available.
No.
That's also a painful thing to see.
It's crazy how, like, over the years it's evolved. First, just to clarify to all the viewers in case they don't understand some of the jargon that we're using. So once you're finished and qualified as a medical doctor in South Africa, you actually have to do 2 years of internship.
Compulsory.
Before you even get registered as an independent practitioner. Well, you also have to do another additional year of community service. Now, hold on. We get paid. We get paid during our community service. It isn't just for free. We're not just serving the community.
And internship.
And we get paid in internship. So that's 3 years after you finish your degree, mandatory work that the government must provide for you. So you will get a post, whether it's in Bushbuck Ridge or in King Edward Hospital in Durban, you will get a post, right? And then after you have completed your community service, you get an independent practitioner number, which allows you to work whether you find a job in government, hopefully, or you can go work directly in private, open your own general practice. You know, there's endless possibilities after that. Just thought I should clarify that.
And also because of, so you end up finishing ComServe, you become an independent practitioner. You're basically like a GP in a way, right?
Yeah.
And the GP market is oversaturated, right? There's a lot of, like, there's a very small percentage of people who have medical aid and able to pay for consultations, right? So you end up going, you have to work in government if you want to actually have like any progression past a GP, right? And that's where you also see a lot of these IV bars and aesthetic medicine happening, because there's the people who are not GPs, right, who want to find some field in private healthcare, they end up going through some, like fulfilling a need for the rich people. Those once a month random glutathione drips, you know, or those fillers or those kind of things.
And even that market is oversaturated.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more saturated.
Yeah, because, I mean, people are now having to think of, you know, what else can we offer people besides conventional, you know, medicine? I mean, it's really challenging. I think, just personally, I think, you know, if there's one thing they could do, which probably won't alleviate the whole problem, but will assist a lot in sort of helping, especially this huge unemployment crisis that we have in this country, is getting private sector to also be involved in the training of people. I mean, these.
So I've heard now Life, and maybe you should even look into this. Life are actually sponsoring posts, but they're registrar posts. So just to clarify again, after you finish community service, then you can work in government as either a medical officer or a registrar. Now, back in the days, when you speak to some of these specialists, they literally walked out of community service. Even people in our class.
Yeah.
Crazy. Like, literally had the exams. They showed interest. Definitely, there were guys that showed keen interest and left their community service and went straight into specializing. It wasn't a thing of, I need to actually work as a medical officer, gain experience. Generally, medical officers run the departments, but they're there to also get trained. And whether it's to improve their surgical skills or just improve their management style, with dealing with you know, internal medical issues, you have that, And then you get a registrar who is someone who is in the specialization program. And then finally, once you specialize after God knows how many years, depending on your specialty, you then become what we call a consultant or a specialist. And currently now, I believe it's Life, the Life Healthcare Group, they are now sponsoring registrar posts. Mm. But then they'll sponsor your salary. And then at the end of your time as a registrar, you'll then become a consultant, but you have to work back those 4 or 5 years for them in their practice. Mm.
And also there's talk of them like cancelling the community service thing as well.
But how is that going to help? Do you have any ideas on this, Solidus?
No, I've heard like for the last couple of years, I remember even when I was in Bethesda, one of the smaller hospitals, they were talking about cutting comms as well as making internship shorter. For me,
how's it going to help the job crisis though? In fact, it's going to make it worse because now you've got people on a less, they're getting paid less now.
Yeah.
So and they're less qualified as well. I mean,
on top of that, you need those years of training and so on. So
definitely. I mean, even post-comm-serve, you still feel, you know, there's a huge gap in terms of your
honestly, yeah. Even when I finished, I didn't feel like I was ready for the world.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, you need time.
So cutting it is definitely, I don't think it's a solution. And like I say, so what Life is doing is probably, you know, I mean, so what I heard about the Life, or what they're doing is they're looking into specialities that they will benefit from. So for example, if a certain area is lacking in neurosurgeons, so they have one neurosurgeon in, I don't know, somewhere in Mlazi, for example. I'm just making an example. Then they will fund another sort of a registrar post in just specifically neurosurgery because there's a huge need and demand and they're having to transfer patients out and they're losing money because of that sort of demand issue. So it's not like a generic, you know, we're trying to get doctors trained and sort of bridge the gap. It's more of, you know, benefiting. Well, I mean, obviously, they can't just sponsor you for nothing.
100%.
But what I'm saying is that, yeah, let's not also get it twisted and think they are helping. They're actually just helping themselves.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that's capitalism. At the end of the day, if it benefits society, why not?
Yeah.
You're still giving someone a job for 4 years. You're giving them a salary for 4 years. Okay, they have to work it back as opposed to what other option they have. Yeah. Do what Solidus is doing now. So tell us what you're currently doing, Solidus, so that the people truly understand how bad this crisis is and why you're doing it.
Yeah, look, currently as it is, I try and go to like different hospitals, you know, especially on the theater days, right? And essentially, I guess the motivation behind it is hoping that if you can show people your skills, and you're essentially having to work harder than the previous groups had to work harder. Because even then, going in there, cutting and being in theatre, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to get a job, you know, at the end. Some people have even done sessionals in some hospitals, and you're working there as a sessional. But then when they have the interviews...
Just explain what a sessional is.
So a sessional person basically is you're not really fully employed. So some hospitals will do this entire thing where they keep you in clinic, right? So because the clinics are the busiest time. So then you just hire doctors for them to just work in the clinic and see patients, but you never really allow them to join the department, right? And then at the end, you get paid a very low amount, but those figures are all available online. And there's some people who've done sessionals in departments, and then even after doing a sessional, now the interviews are being ran, and you're like, oh, why wasn't I shortlisted? I've been working here every day. So stuff like that even happens. So even some of the stuff that I'm doing might actually not even benefit me in any way, you know. But I figured if I still get cutting experience, I guess it's worth it.
Yeah. It'll definitely help in the long run. And and that's always my advice, especially for people who want to join ophthalmology, because of also the just the demand and the number of posts that are available. I don't see anyone being employed without either medical officer time or voluntary time.
Yeah.
Which is pretty sad. I mean, and how is the family dealing with this? I want to know how, you know, your parents are dealing with. I'm sure it must be a huge burden on them as well.
Yeah, look, it's been very difficult. I think they've been very supportive. And look, I'm someone, I'd say, I'm not one who lives for pressures. You know, I remember I talked to my mom and dad and I said to them, look, if push comes to shove, I don't mind just taking the car back and everything, you know, moving back home as well, you know. But obviously being from a very Zulu upbringing, you know, I talked to my mom and I told her, mom, like, yeah, maybe I might have to come back home and maybe just stay a bit, you know. And then it's like, no, you're not coming back home. Next thing you are sitting here and then they're going to say, yeah, well, he went to varsity, came back, still unemployed. You know? So at the end, she refused. She refused to have me back home. And I guess what's
so she's happening, like, now you're going to stay there and make it yeah, work.
She was like, if you're going to, you know, in the olden days, people used to leave the villages to find jobs, right? You're not about to do the opposite, you know?
You're not coming back home.
Yeah, so I think at the end, they've been supportive about a lot of things. We've had to put a lot
Yeah, it sounds like they're very supportive.
Yeah, but we've put things on hold, you know? We've had plans and everything like that. But I think at this point, I'm burning through my savings, you know? I don't really know in what direction everything is going, but I guess, you know, as the great Mandoza said, so at the end, you just got to keep on showing up and you hope that something is going to work out at the end, and that's where we are. We're just hopeful.
And the things I see you doing, I'm optimistic you're going to get something.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think you're on the right track. As I said, these two, they have no idea. I was 8 months unemployed. I know that struggle. I know you, oof. And the bills hit you, and you're like, where am I getting the money from? I'm eating through my savings.
Sure.
I also had that chat. In fact, look, and that was during COVID. So everything was locked down. And then I signed up with a locum agency, which I would recommend you do if you can for the time being. And they run a lot of the emergency departments around Gauteng and around South Africa. And during COVID, there was a bit of a shortage. I think people were even scared to work. So the people that could afford to sit at home were like, it's fine, I don't need to work.
Yeah.
But those of us who are like, I don't care if I die.
I could die.
I'll die for this rent. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to go for it. And wherever they gave me work, I went. Yeah. I drove to Newcastle. Like out the blue, they were like, 2 days, you're going to go to Newcastle. We'll give you accommodation, basically a shack. Like, I don't even understand how they call it accommodation, to go and cover in a ED there. Did that for a couple of months.
Yeah.
Begged everywhere. Went on every interview that I possibly could. And at that time, also, emergency departments were empty because they shut down alcohol, so they weren't as busy.
Damn.
So they were even cutting the rates. So like a normal rate, just so that people understand, because they obviously look at us doctors and probably thinking, oh, you guys are all spoiled. People don't realize if you don't have a fully salaried job and you work as a locum, you're getting paid probably around, and at that time, it was around 350 rand an hour before tax.
Yeah.
This is during COVID.
Serious. It hasn't changed, eh?
When
you think they'd be paying you more for risking your life.
Yeah.
And patients were being charged more, by the way.
Yeah.
And yet, we were struggling. And people... So, thankfully, I mean, I got some jobs. I managed to get, like, almost sort of a permanent locum kind of job with a GP practice. And I was there, and I was like, I guess this is my life now. But then eventually... And look, I have no problems with GPs. You know, GP. We need GPs.
We actually need more GPs. We need GPs. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, when you have aspirations and you want to progress in life, you got to just hustle, man. So I thankfully got a job after 8 months, and it was a COVID post. And then that was only 5 months. But thankfully, they just kept renewing it. And now I'm on a semi-permanent contract.
That's actually crazy because, you know, like a lot of locums actually, if you're talking about 2010, we're in 2025 and they're paying like 300, 350 an hour. We're more than 5 years later. The craziest installment is this new thing that GPs are doing where they're paying you 100 rands per patient. And the thing is, if you're working in mid-rand, you're going to see 7 to 10 patients if you're lucky. That's basically like 1,000 rands or 700 rands after working for so long.
Yeah.
So it's become tough.
Yeah.
And if you have to drive to Soweto to do a shift, you're there, you're thinking, okay, 700, petrol, 200, tax. You know, so I'm actually quite sad that the rate hasn't even improved that much.
Yeah.
And it's probably because of this demand issue. Because, I mean, most of these agencies are also run by non-professional, non-medical professionals.
Yes.
And I mean,
it's just a business.
It's a business.
At the end, yeah.
And noticing that there's so many people in demand.
They need the money.
They need the money. If you say, no, I can't do it for this rate, they can just pay someone else. So it's a huge, huge crisis. And which is why the department needs to intervene. And they really need posts. We really need, there needs to be change. There really needs to be change.
So, Dr. Solidus, if someone were to come to you and say, look, I want to do medicine. I want to be a doctor. What do you say?
In hindsight.
Yeah, it's tricky, né? I think, look, I have a younger brother. Right. Obviously, also growing up in KZN, you know, like there's a bit of, you know, that the Indian inside me that's forcing him to become a doctor, you know. And he asked me the other day, he said to me, okay, but like, you know, like I see you guys on TV striking and you guys don't have jobs, but you're telling me that I need to study to become a job, that I'd be unemployed. So that you and I can sit at home and spend more time together, not working, you know. And it's a tough one because it's a new normal. And the thing about new normals is sometimes they can be a transition, sometimes they can become permanent. Mm-hmm. So a part of me kind of still hopes that this is just a transition towards it, you know. Because I think the times when we were working, I'd honestly say it's very fulfilling. You know, so I obviously ask what the motivation is behind studying medicine, but right now things aren't going very well. Yeah. And I think I look at medicine as kind of being like a Manchester United fan. You know, there was a time where everything was well, but right now your team sucks and it's probably going to get relegated. but you kind of just have to wake up every morning and just keep on hoping that
things will change.
As they change managers, you know, at some point we might make it back to Europa. So you just stay hopeful. I don't know.
So in conclusion to that question, yes or no? Study medicine or not?
I'd say yes, right? Only because, look, I'm a gambling man and they know me at Betway personally. So I hope that things are going to be better. I'm just always hopeful.
I think you should actually say no. Because you say no, the person who really wants it will do it either way.
Yeah.
Like I was warned before I did medicine. And they told me don't do medicine. I think it's not. You think it's rewarding.
Yeah, I still don't think you should do it.
Yeah.
I still think you should just quit and give him your job. And then you just do whatever you like doing. Which is actually just running our gents clinic. Yeah,
exactly.
And you're doing very well. I must be honest. He is a one-man show. This is we need nothing. I come sit here and host this show.
Exactly.
He is the brains behind.
He's doing an amazing job. He's doing a great job. I had one question for you.
Before you, I also just want to point out that there are other options in medicine. Like, people mustn't think like you need to do clinical medicine for the rest of your life. Yeah. For those of you that are watching this, who I'm sure are like, geez, we all screwed. There's other stuff in medicine like pathology. You can go do anatomical pathology. You can go do forensics.
Mm.
Exactly.
These are things that people don't really look at. Yeah. It's not top of mind. But these are things that are, you have an option. Or you can try and compete with us. You're not going to win because we know what we're doing. But you can go open a clinic. Yeah. You can try something in business. You can go get an MBA and then work in corporate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
These are still options for you if you're feeling like, I don't want to do clinical medicine. I know people that have gone that route and are extremely happy, successful. Yeah. They've got great jobs. They are in either like tech or in the data space in medicine. There's a lot to do there. I think people are very focused in this one direction, right? Yeah. You finish medicine, you finish internship, then you finish CompServ, then you become a medical officer, then you pray and hope and write every exam under the sun, and then you become a specialist, and that's the only path to success. Mm-hmm. Not true.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think there are, I mean, all of us know a guy from back in our schools. I'm sure you know a guy from back in your school. Useless. Yeah. Useless. Useless. The teacher was like, you're going to fail. You're a failure. You're useless. And he's driving a better car than I am right now.
Doing very well.
Doing very well.
Yeah.
Because he saw something different. I think also, like, we are sort of stuck in this hamster wheel, that there's only one way to make money. There's only one way to live. There's only one way to help people.
Yeah.
We also are altruistic in our nature. We think that, you know, medicine is the only way we can help people. If you're a millionaire, you can help a lot of people.
True.
It's not the only way to become a millionaire by going out there and serving your community. You can go become a really good businessman and then donate your money.
Exactly, And I think another thing it's gotten, especially I think you guys, you know, younger doctors, to be looking into is like Suhail has been saying. I think we've all sort of thought there's this sort of ladder that we all have to go through in order to be successful. Looking at different ways of doing things, you know. For example, you have you thought of the, I mean, the idea of maybe being a surgeon is not, you know, what God has in line for you. Maybe starting your own virtual clinic.
Don't put more doubt.
No. But like, I mean,
yeah,
because I feel like we, for a lot of people, we can't think above, you know, me getting beyond an MO post, you know, or and like you're saying, there's so many other opportunities. Not even opportunities of employment. Opportunities of you creating employment for other doctors, you know,
at the end.
Yeah, have you dabbled or thought about, you know, starting your own thing?
I've thought of a lot of things, right? Like, just last year, actually this year, I just graduated from, like, a postgrad in business, right? And essentially, I've always had plans of going into business, right? But I think the plans that I've always had to do more at a specialist level, right? Obviously, now, it becomes a very different story because one has to sit down and just either try to knock this door down, right? And at the end, you're knocking the door and it isn't really working out, you know? I think the closest thing to compare it to...
Definitely not.
This is more of a very serious comparison, you know? Sometimes I get serious. I'd probably compare it to DMing Nomsa Mombatha, right? In the sense that you keep on sending the DMs and hoping that she responds, you know? And if she's watching this, please respond. you just keep on hoping that the thing works out, right? And it doesn't. And I think, obviously, I'd say compared to you guys, I'm kind of like still in the early phase of coming to the realization that she might never respond. But at the end, I guess as time goes on, your mind starts to be open towards, you know, maybe I should DM Faith Ngezi or someone else. If Faith is watching, please respond as well. So I'm open to a lot of things. I'm also kind of working on things that are kind of like, you know, things I can't really say or talk about right now. But deep down, I think I'll probably always just say I'm a surgeon. I don't think I've considered anything else before that, you know. And yeah, working on things, but at the end, I'm a surgeon through and through.
That's what you want to do. Well, I mean, you know, we've all DM'd Nomsa Mombatha. Thankfully, she replied to all of us.
And no, not all of us. You guys, you are unmarried people.
So she
likes people who have a job, essentially.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
That's the point I was getting at. Yeah.
Okay.
So we were chatting about your other hobbies. Now that you're unemployed, you started doing some stand-up, huh?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
EJ, how did you stumble upon that?
Because
look, I mean, we haven't really spoke about your videos are funny, man. I think it's cool that you can highlight like these touchy issues, somewhat difficult topics, and you make them lighthearted. That's the point of stand-up comedy, in my opinion.
Yeah, then.
So what got you into it? How did you stumble upon this?
It's a very weird one. But look, essentially, you know, I've just always been one who, you know, sometimes when you're with your boys, you're just telling jokes and stuff like that, you know. Yeah. And I remember when I was, I think around grade 10 or so. So in grade 10, I was always like the kid in the front, right? I wasn't someone who spoke a lot in class. But every time I did an oral, right, I could actually predict at what point in time from the things that I'm saying that people would laugh, right? And then fast forward, my friend actually recently got married. When my friend got married, obviously it's a wedding speech, you know, it's one of the most important things. I realized, right, that it was an entire room of at least 50% of the people were over a certain age, right? And then probably only 20 of them, I'd say, were around my age group. And then the rest were probably just children. And I remember just sitting there, even thinking about the jokes and everything, and being able to actually make people laugh, especially when it's people that are much older than you, people who aren't, and especially because the thing about a wedding, if people aren't expecting to laugh, do you understand? Like, I'd honestly say that a stand-up comedy set is way, way harder, right? But also kind of easier because people expect to laugh, right? Mm. But then when it comes to a wedding, I mean, you got old people who really don't care. Like, I mean, people have been doing speeches for so long. They want to know what time is lunch. Like, they want to eat, they're hungry. And after I realized that I could make such a different group of people laugh by saying different statements and certain things they could relate to, I thought to myself, maybe I could do this, you know? And then one day, one of my friends sent me a link and he said, hey, look, there's these places that have open stand-up mics, whatever. Right. So he sent me at around four or so, and the thing was happening at six. And I remember thinking, ah, look, just go do it. If no one laughs, then, you know, it's okay. That means you were just wrong the entire time. But also, it's not like you have a job anyway. You know, you don't have anything to lose. You have nothing to lose at all. Yeah, look, I figured, look, maybe I might go there, get a promotion, leave as a waitress or something. I don't know. And yeah, I did the set. And for at least 70% of the time, I could predict when people would laugh. And I think that's when I actually realized that without trying hard, this thing felt very natural. So I just do it for fun, I guess, now and then. And so.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
Nice.
There's a comedian I know you should meet. And
Yeah. Kind of a similar story as well, I'm sure. It was something very similar.
He's sitting close to me.
But that's great, man. I think medicine is a nice gateway to stand up.
Definitely. That's the best medicine.
Very nice gateway to stand up. You don't know that I'm a stand-up comedian as well.
No, you told me.
Yeah.
No, like I'm too many stand-up comedian doctors.
Like I'm a professional stand-up comedian. It's funny that you didn't know this, but that's cool.
But it seems like it. I think even is it Musa?
Yeah, Riyad Musa. Yeah. Who I always get compared to. But yeah, he was the first. I'm the second. Now you're the third. So that's there's a chain at least.
Yeah. That can be actually one of the options. Like you say, a gateway.
Yeah.
Should like be something offered.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. We think that, you know, this is the only path. Maybe you can become a stand-up comedian, man. I tried it.
Yes, I think we should try it as
Look, it can be lucrative. It can be horribly not lucrative. But anyway. Comedy is a good outlet for your pain.
It really is. It helps a lot.
Yeah. Right?
It helps a lot.
Right? Yo, when you're going through something, you go on that stage, you can just talk about it. Yeah. Sometimes it can make it worse. If nobody laughs, gee whiz. Now you're like, I'm sad and...
I'm weak at my job and my hobby.
And my hobby. Here's where I come to relax and I'm not even relaxed.
But thankfully I haven't experienced that. You know, I always have.
Don't worry, it'll come. Keep doing it. You're gonna feel it.
You're
gonna feel it. Don't worry. Every stand up comedian has tasted story, death. Yeah? Has tasted death. Yo, I can tell you. Let me tell you one of my worst stories. I once got booked for a gig. I get there, the microphone is attached to a speaker that's there. Right? Just there. And it's like a corded mic. So you can't even go further then. So they didn't have a stage. It was literally a table. A table at a bar. And I'm telling jokes to like five, six
people. Standing tables. On the table.
I'm standing on the table with the microphone.
On the table.
On the table. Guys are so drunk. Nobody's even listening. It's one of those things.
On top of that.
Yo, a guy takes a bottle cap, throws it at me. He's like, tell us some jokes. At that point, I leave.
I love it.
Get off stage, and I'm like, okay, man, just pay me. I need to leave. Pays me with a bank packet full of coins. You know, they used to have bank packets with coins. Yeah. I was like, this sucks.
Sure. I wish someone would have filmed that. Like, I love watching hecklers. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, you know, the scene when someone does a set and then someone disturbs it.
Oh.
Like one of my favorite lines is the ones when they say, "When does the comedy start?" That's how you finished your set already. Like I wanna.
Yeah. Don't worry, you're gonna experience all of these things.
Sheesh.
I have faith. I have faith.
Yeah.
You're gonna know whether this is for you or not.
Or not.
But if you like watching hecklers, you can watch some of my stuff on YouTube. Sail Essa.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, that's all the time that we have for this episode today. Thank you for watching. Any final comments, any words of inspiration, motivation for the people, anything you'd like to leave them with, Solidus?
I'm sure. I probably just, you know, my two things that my mom would say constantly to me, you know. The first one is, those dishes better not sleep in the sink. The second one is, it's a Zulu saying, basically, that masukzokanya qala kube mnyama, which essentially means that before the sun rises, it's going to be really dark, you know. And I think that for me is a saying that really has helped me through a lot of things. And I think regardless of what you're going through, I would honestly just say, yeah, the sun will come out tomorrow.
Look, that's some that's some sad ass saying.
No, it really is. Yeah, but you know? I mean, sometimes the sun rises close. Sometimes it's Eskom. Yeah. But nonetheless.
But the sun will rise.
It will rise.
And we hope for a better future for all of our young doctors. If you are really struggling, you know, share this video with your friends so they can hear the story. And not put in that application
to be a doctor.
Yeah. And yeah, maybe just don't stop. Guys, stop studying medicine. There's enough of us. There's enough now. That's what I want to leave you guys with. There's enough of us here. We don't need more of you. Stay home. Study actuarial science. Fail a few times. And then go join the spaza shop down the road. Thank you for watching another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. My name is Dr. Sue Lessa, signing off.
Dr. Ntantha Vilagazi.
Dr. Naseem Sharif.
Solidus. Unemployed.
I think for the first time we had a doctor.
First time we had a doctor. We were supposed to also sign off with doctor. Yeah, come on, man. This is your CV. People are watching.
Look, apparently, per qualification, I'm a doctor, but I don't identify as one. You know? Dr. Solidus, signing off. Otherwise, you guys might be able to see me on some random road with a sign pretty soon.
Yeah.
If you guys do, please drop a R5. So.
We'll appreciate it. Thank you guys for watching. We'll see you next week.